doesn't last. People who come to teachers that speak about pain and suffering from the beginning will come 2-3 times and then leave. 5 times, 10 times and then leave.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are enough teachers, you know, who teach this. This nice stuff. But, you know, it's like peaceful, joyful, you know, Buddhism. Not getting... We are not angry. We don't have any hate. Huh? This is making oneself. Now you listen. Huh?
Yes.
Now just listen. Sit quietly and listen. We are deluding ourselves. If we think there is no pain. Pain is the first noble truth. There is dukkha. In our life there is dukkha. And if we cannot face that there is dukkha, we cannot go the path of practice. It's for most of the people in the West, this is the driving engine, you know, that they undergo the path of practice, that they undergo meditation. So, and if meditation doesn't cure the dukkha, what's the purpose of it? It's like the purpose, it's just like the same. When a woman, you know, looks in the mirror and sees that her face is ugly and she takes some paint and paints it over. And then her face looks nice. In the evening, you know, it's gone again. And the next day she has to paint it over. If we constantly paint over our dukkha, constantly paint over our suffering, our pain, our unpleasant feelings, with a nice meditation, smile, sit in there and smile. It's not going to work. It's like, you know, some people love to read a book, you know, for amusement. You know, if it's a funny book, you know, or if it's a kind of book they like. Then for that time, the dukkha disappears. And the pleasantness of the reading the book appears. Or other people listening to music. And they completely forget themselves in music. So it's a pleasant experience. Others are driving a car very fast, and it's a very pleasant experience. Others are going hiking. Yeah? They all, and the moment you know this experience vanishes, then the dukkha is still there. So this is not the way out. So if you don't tell the people about the first noble truth, that there is dukkha in our life, and if we are lucky as human beings, we have 50% of dukkha and 50% of sukha. But most of us have more dukkha than sukha. Sukha is the pleasant feelings. We remember the pleasant feelings and are attached to them. But how often a day do we have pleasant feelings? Maybe altogether, if we are really lucky, for an hour. And the rest of the 23 hours are painful, unpleasant feelings or neutral feelings. So if we don't tell, you, if I'm a teacher and if I don't tell the people that there is dukkha and show them where the dukkha is, then they won't understand and they won't get the courage, you know, to fight it. And if I tell them how to overcome dukkha, how to look properly, how dukkha arises, how to look properly, how the things, all these things arise and cease, and how these things are not me, are not myself, do not belong to me. Then it's just painting over. It's like you have a very rusty car, and you're too lazy to replace it. Well, you just paint it over. And 2 months later, you know, all the rust comes back through. So it's not really useful. To teach them like this is not really useful. And that's why I call it, you know, what is mostly taught in the West is this kind of Buddhism that just paints over our painful feeling. That's what the people want, that's why they buy it, that's why they give money for it. Because they want to get rid for at least, that's why people go to a movie. They want to get rid of their unpleasant feeling. That's why they're prepared to pay for it. Because they know, okay, for at least for 2 hours, and if it's a long movie, then for 3 hours I forget everything. That's why they drink alcohol, to forget things. But afterwards, it's still the same. You just test it out. And I test it out myself. I said, okay, I want to go to a movie. Why do you want to go to a movie? Well, let's look at the heart. Huh? Oh, there's an unpleasant feeling. Okay, acknowledge there's an unpleasant feeling. Okay, now let's go to a movie. After the movie, I reflected again. So how was it? Oh, wonderful. 2 hours was wonderful. And now, how is your feeling? Now, it's the same. So it didn't change a thing. It doesn't change, you know. And I want only to teach, you know, things to help themselves, you know, to change these things. To find the reason of the dukkha. And not only to find the reason of the dukkha, but to get out of this samsara vata, out of this roller coaster of life. The roller coaster up and down, up and down, up and down. Once we are in heaven, then we go down to hell. Are you really prepared to do that? Are you really willing to do that? How often do you want to be reborn? How often do you want to learn the language? How often do you want to learn to sing? How often do you want to learn to walk? Or digest? Is it a pleasant experience? It's a lot of painful experience learning all these things. The adults are laughing about us, you know, how stupid we are when we start to talk or when we start to think. Don't think properly, yeah? No. They laugh about it and it hurts us. Our painful feelings. Until we're really ready, you know, and it takes about, for a Western person, it takes about 20 years until he really is firm into his views and opinion, until he really can stand on his own feet. 20 years of training. Who likes training? Now we don't like training. In Buddhist practice is training. It's training the heart. It's not training the mind. So it's a completely different kind of training. It's training the mind. It's curbing in the mind and getting control of the mind. Only allow it to do what we want it to do. So if you want to stay with the Buddha, then just let it stay with the Buddha. If you want to investigate, then let it investigate. And don't get into this thinking or that thinking. To curb in the mind, to get control of the mind. Because we are not in control. We try to control everything, but we don't control the very essential thing. We don't control the kilesa. We don't control avijja and delusion. So if I tell the people, you know, delude yourself, you know, everything is nice, everything is fine, you just need to practice Buddha and then the pain goes away. Of course it will go away. For now, for 2 hours, dependent on how advanced the people are in their practice. And maybe stay, you know, they stay in samadhi for 3-4 hours, and they come back and everything is the same. And the longer they stay in samadhi, the more cross is the difference, or the difference of being in samadhi and coming back into the world of sense. But who likes to be bombarded by all these little bits and pieces? When we go through a town or when we go through a village, the sounds are bombarding us, the advertisements are bombarding us, the sights and the smells are constantly bombarding us, and constantly we want this or want that, we don't like this or we don't like that. And we have to get a handle on it. So if I don't say the truth, how can we ever get a handle on it? If I don't tell the people, you know, look at this, see, you know, okay, realize there is dukkha. Or this is not a nice thought. You just accept it that there is not a nice thought. It has come up anyway. So, but look for the cause of this thought. What is the cause? And the cause is within us. It's our habit to think like that. And we have to break the habit. We have to break the habit. And the first thing how to break the habit is to learn to Buddha. That breaks the habit of the mind constantly thinking this or thinking that. That certainly breaks the habit. Once the mind is used to, and of course we use the quality of the mind that he forms habits. So we like to form the habit to think Buddha. And he will do it after a while. Just like our old habit. But it will replace our old habit. So things have changed already. And if we have changed to a better. Because if we stay with Buddha, we cannot think about all these unwholesome things that we normally tend to think about. So this gives us a handle on. Handle being mindful. Being aware of what is going on. Being aware, even when we walk, being aware of the sights that come into us. well, we are men, you know, and if we see a pretty woman, you know, all our head is going around. You can't even prevent it, not yet, no. It's just going there. We love it. And we like it. And what's wrong with it? You know, we say, what's wrong with it? But we burn our heart because the moment desire comes up, we want this woman. And then we might want to think about, you know, how we can manage, you know, to contact her. And then the problem becomes more difficult and more difficult. But if we just see, you know, and let it pass by, remembering our Buddha, Buddha, then the sight has passed by and nothing burns our heart. So we actually stay calm and cool. And it's a nice feeling. People who experience samadhi, it's a nice feeling to stay calm and cool. Whatever, if you have a girlfriend, then it's fine, you know, look at her. But investigate these things. Look at the things. How much pleasant things, how much pleasant experience does your girlfriend give to you? How often are they? And how many unpleasant experiences do you have from your partnership? And you will see, you know, it's not balanced. Not at all balanced. It's way out of balance. Now that is the thing. You know, if I say something, if I teach Dhamma, then I teach the truth to people to listen to, like the Lord Buddha. He taught the truth. He didn't want to deceive people. He didn't want to delude people because we are already deluded in the West. We are deluded just like the Lord Buddha when he was still a young prince. And it's very similar. In the West, we lock up people who are sick. So on the street, we don't see sick people. We lock up people who are old. Put them in elderly homes. And all the rest is just young people. Full of energy, full of spirit. We don't see dead people because we put them into... bury them into the ground. And just like the experience of the Lord Buddha when he still was a prince. In his palace there were only young people. There was only pleasure and fun. And when we go into a town, there's only pleasure and fun. We don't see anything. We don't see old people, we don't see sick people, we don't see dead people. All what we see is pleasure and fun. That's the reason is why. What is going on beyond this palace? That's what the Lord Buddha, when he still was a prince, saw. Then he went out, and then he then he saw sick people. And then he asked, what is it? Has everybody become sick? And then the carriage driver, you know, told him, yes, that is not quite normal, that people get sick. And then he saw dead people. Do people have to die? Yes. It's normal, everybody has to die. And these are old people. Oh, yeah. What is this? That is an old person. Oh, does everybody get old? Yes, everybody has to get old. And when he gets old, then he's going to die. And then he saw a young recluse. What is that? That is a person who has gone the way out of the world, who's trying to find some peace and happiness. And then he decided, after seeing all this, then he thought about it. If I'm going to get sick, if I'm going to get die, if I'm going to get old, you know, what is the meaning of life? There must be something, you know. There must be a way out of this dukkha. So, and then he sought for it. He went out and practiced very hard until he found the truth. And then he told the truth. But at that time, you know, remember, at that time in India, it was very common to see old people, sick people and dead people. And for the Westerners, it's not common. So to delude the Westerners even more and tell them, you know, everything is nice, fine, just paint it over. That is not the correct way. I just can't see it that this is the correct way. So if I talk, you know, then I have to talk about the first noble truth, that there is dukkha. And dukkha is not only pain and suffering, because some people do not suffer, or don't think that they suffer, or they don't think they have lots of pain. So it's also restlessness, boredom, discomfort, any kind of discomfort. uncomfortable. We all have them. Everybody can agree to it. So, the first noble truth, that is, we can justify it. Okay, yes, it is. Yeah, it's a truth. The second noble truth is the truth of the cause of this dukkha. And the cause of this dukkha is our attachment to all this. It's our attachment to the family, it's our attachment to our brothers and sisters, it's the attachment to our partners, our girlfriend, our boyfriend, to our children, to our material things. So, that's the second noble truth. We found it out, the cause. And then he gave us this great news. And that is the third noble truth, that there is an end of suffering. Ah, there's an end of dukkha. Ah. And then he told us the way that leads to the end of all dukkha. And that is the fourth noble truth. And normally I'm talking only about this noble truth, because that is the way of practice. And it's a practice of sila, that means keeping the five precepts. Of samadhi, finding concentration and being mindfulness, developing mindfulness. And of wisdom, of teaching the heart. Wisdom is not knowledge. Just get that into your heart. Wisdom and knowledge are two different things. Knowledge is derived from books, from other views and from other opinions. Wisdom is developed. Wisdom, we normally call insight. If we call it insight, it's being inside. So, where is the wisdom arising? Inside us. Ah, that's where it is. Inside our chitta. Inside our heart. That's where the wisdom is. But because it's so packed up with all this stuff that we used to acquire, just think about, you know, going shopping every day, buying this, what you want, you know, and just throw it into your house, eh? Then there's one day where you can't enter your house anymore because of all this stuff. Now the path of practice is removing all this stuff. Chuck it out, chuck it out, chuck it out, chuck it out. Until you can enter your room. And then you see in the time, you know, it has become very dirty. The windows are blind, you know, and everything is just filthy and dirty. So you have to clean it up. Until the room that you live, and when I talk about the room, you know, it is the heart that we live in. It is our chitta that we live in. To clean it up, to make it shiny. To open the windows, or to clean up the windows so that the sun can come in. And once the sun can come in, you know, we see still these little spots that are, you know, the little spots of dirt, you know, that are still in our room. So we clean it up completely. And we remove the thing that causes the storm. And it is nothing else than avijja. This is the way of panya. But before we even start the path of practice, the path of practice is not easy to do. It's the toughest work we can do. People do a lot of tough work. You know, they go to the North Pole or South Pole, and you know, go through ice. You know, don't mind. You know, if they burn their legs, or if they lose their legs, or they just want to find the North Pole or the South Pole. Or people, you know, looking for gold for 40 years, don't mind, you know, how they live, you know, what they eat. They just eat enough so that they can work to get the gold. And if we would have the same attitude for our inner goal, we wouldn't have any troubles, and within a few years' time, you know, we would have passed everything. So think about, you know, people who put up so much difficulties, who put up so much suffering, you know, just to get what they want to. And they don't mind if their body, you know, is wrecked afterwards, as long as they got the lump of gold, or as long as they find the North Pole. They don't mind. But the moment we sit for 1 hour, we mind, you know, we think our body is breaking apart, and we're going to do some damage to our body. You think that you would find any kind of gold when you do that? No way. And it's only for material things. Finding the gold is material. But you know, what would you do with a lump of gold? You go and, you know, within a month you have spent it all in line with your wishes. And then what's that? Nothing. Nothing left. But a person who has found the North Pole, maybe, is in the books of records or whatever. What has he from it?
Nothing.
Just a feeling, you know, when he finds the North Pole, he's happy, you know, and he tells his comrades, and they praise him, you know, and then that's it. But the praise is not all day long. It's once in a while. It's material things or mental things, you know. We're looking for wealth, for honor, for this and for that. And it all vanishes. We all know, people who are honored, you know, one day, you know, they will fall down. They're not honored anymore. So this will all, it all vanishes. Our gold that we acquired, our wealth that we acquired, you know, within one day it can go. Today we are a millionaire, tomorrow we have no sense. Happened to quite a few people. Happened in the midst of life, you know. Or some people who are poor, you know, and then they win in the lottery. And then suddenly they are rich. What is it? It's all the cause of our karma. It's all what we have sown in the past. And where is this karma coming from? It's coming from our good deeds or bad deeds. Whatever we experience right now is the result of our good and bad deeds that we have done in the past. Not only done in the past of this life, but also done in the past of the last life. The Lord Buddha teaches us very clearly, the person who doesn't take any life, it means including animal life, he's not harming any living being. He will, the next time when he's going to be reborn, you know, he will have a long life. Now look at the people who have a short life. It's just the opposite. They are the takers of living. Or they are the takers of life. People who are not generous, you know, are poor. And people who are extremely generous are extremely rich. But we don't believe it. You know, where does this wealth come from? It comes from generosity. It doesn't come from anything else. We always think, oh, he's lucky. No, he's born in the family of a prince. Or in the family of a royal family. And the other one is born in the ghetto of New York. His father is a killer, professional killer. So why is this? Because of our karma. Because of the things we did in the past. And that will determine, you know, the moment and in the future. So if you are generous right now, then in the next life you will be rich. More or less, you know, it depends on our generosity. But people don't believe it, you know, they play lottery. It doesn't matter, in the West or in the East, they don't believe it. You know, they've just played the lottery and they think they become rich. And I always tell them, you know, how generous have you been this life? Not really. See, if you haven't been generous in this life, you certainly haven't been generous in your last life. So where should the money come from? There is nothing free in this world. Nothing is free in this world. Nothing is luck and chance. Everything is the acquirement. If you work hard, you know, we get something. We all know that. More in the West than in the East. We are educated. We are raised by this. Work hard and then you get your thing. And we know that. That works out. So if we work hard, you know, being generous, then the next life you are rich. What the rich people are doing now with their wealth, that is their problem. Some people, you know, they think they for granted because they forget whatever we've done in our past lives, we forget. So they get greedy. They lose all their money and they lose all their wealth. In the next life they are poor. And looking, you know, being envious of the people who are rich. And if they're going the wrong path, then they're going to kill them and, you know, get their riches. And then they'll just dwindles down in the house. So if you don't tell the people, you know, what is the cause for all these things? And everything has a cause. We believe, yeah, especially in the West, we are so much scientific. We believe in physics. Apple falls down the tree and it doesn't fall up in the air. We all believe it. If we put something into motion, we know it will have an effect. And in physics we can predict the effect. So why don't we believe in the physics of our mental, of our spirituality? There we don't believe. We think it's all luck. It's all our fortune.
It's our right.
You know, some people say it's my right, you know. I want my right. My parents have to pay me. Right? Pay you for what, you know? They raised you 20 years. They have to give me a proper education, though they go in front of a court and sue them. What's that? What kind of attitude is it? It's not my right. Can you see what I'm pointing out? It's a prerequisite that before we even start, you know, practicing. Generosity, respect for the parent, gratitude for whatever we get. It's prerequisites for our practice. Generosity, why? If we can't let go of our material things, how can we live, get rid of our spiritual things, of our views, opinions, of our thoughts? How can we let go of that if we can't let even go of our small possessions? Material possession is much easier to get. Oh, okay, have it. Yeah? How much more difficult is it to get rid of our views? You know? I believe this. Huh? Okay, get rid of it. Okay, there you have it. So it's a pre-training, actually. Respect, if we don't have respect for our parents, if we don't have respect for our teachers, be it worldly teachers or spiritual teachers, how can we have respect for something that is so superior like the Dhamma? We don't even have respect for ourselves. If we don't have respect for ourselves, we don't accept what is here. We will never see the way how we are. And unless we see how we are, we cannot work. You know, if you go into a factory and don't know anything about it, you first have to look, where are the tools, where is this, where is the material, you know, and see and get an overview of what is there. And then you can do something with it. But if you don't get an overview of yourself or whatever you think you are, if you think this is bad, I don't want to look at it, you know, how can you ever work with it? It's useless. It's really useless. So we just accept. And gratitude, for whatever is given to us, you know, we are grateful for. Whatever we receive in Dhamma, you know, be it unpleasant. Then we think, okay, great, you know, now I still can take it, you know. Now I can take, this is the karma. This is the result of my past action, even if I don't know what I did, you know. But this must be the result of my past action. So I'm grateful. Now I can take it. Tomorrow I might not be able to take it when I'm sick or when I'm really, you know, when I'm half dead. But now I can take it, okay. Be grateful for whatever is happening, because now I can take it. And it's not really difficult to take things. Huh? Just, if they happen anyway, we just accept them. So in this form, these are the prerequisites. Prerequisites before we actually can go on our path of practice. Because the path of practice all deals with inner things. All deals with our feelings, with our memories, with our thoughts. With our views, with our opinion. Well, how much more difficult is it to get rid of them? To let them go? Okay, pass it, it's just a view. What validity has a view? Nothing. It's just some things that we infer. From our knowledge, from our past actions. Huh? How right is it? You know, let's have a look, you know, how right it is. If you always think, you know, when we have a bad feeling, go to the movie, and then it changes the feeling into a nice and pleasant one, then we think, you know, we always have to go to a movie, you know, the moment we have a bad feeling. We have never actually evaluated if this is working or not. It's the same thing, you know, people love to go in boxing, you know, or love to go in hiking or jogging. Yeah? They never ask what is the reason for. It just comes up, it pops up, you know, and then we think, oh, we have to do it. I want to see another city, you know? And everything what you take is the same old stuff. That's why I sometimes say, you know, get rid of the contents of your backpack, and then you are free to travel anywhere. And wherever you travel, you are free. But if you have your backpack full of heavy stones, you know, wherever you go, you know, you will feel the heaviness of your backpack. Especially if you have to climb up a mountain. And the backpack is our citta. Heavy stones. Huh? heavy views, heavy opinions, this and that. It's all heavy emotions. We don't see. We have to see. We have to get mindful to see the causes for all this. And if I don't teach this, you know, how people will actually manage to. If I don't teach, you know, look at this, look at that, you know, find the cause for this. An emotion is something that is built up. It's an avalanche that starts out with a little stone. Look at the little stone, you know, and then keep it, you know, don't let it roll. That means, you know, you have a thought and stop it with Buddha. Don't let it get into an association and another thought and another association and another feeling. Don't let it build up to be very angry. Because then we have to let it out. And letting it out means we are going to produce some very unwholesome karma. Whatever. Letting out our greed or letting out our hate. And stop it in the first place before it becomes an avalanche that destroys us. And with anger, you know, it not only destroys us, but it destroys other people who are on the way on it. And we all know that. So you have to teach. If I teach, you know, I have to teach the truth, you know, to make the people think what they are doing. Sometimes they say, you know, in the West, you know, sorry to say that I lived a little bit in America, but sometimes I thought in America the people are just grown-up kids. They don't have any responsibility. They don't take up any responsibility for their own life. They put all the responsibility on the government, on the local government, on whatever. And if there's some problem within the country, then they look for another country who's guilty of that problem. And then they fight it. It's not only America, it's a lot of countries. Germany did the same thing in the Second World War. They blamed all the Jews for their unhappiness. Well, so they killed them off. Huh? Did that make them more happy? Doubtful. Make them suffer in hell for a long, long time. It's not the way to find a scapegoat. If you understand what I mean, right? It was a scapegoat. We're looking for a scapegoat for our unhappy feeling. And of course we can find it. This person looks angry at me, huh? So he's responsible for my anger. Or this person triggered my anger. Or this car, you know, this car triggered my greed. So we smash it off. What has the car to do with our greed? What has the ice cream to do with our greed? What has that person to do with our anger? The anger arises within our very own heart, within our very own citta. And if we are mindful of our whatever happens within our own house, then we take up responsibility. Okay, I'm doing this. It happens in my own heart. Especially when I get angry. You know, at first it happens here. When the anger becomes so boiling hot that I have to put it out on another person, intentionally or unintentionally, first it arises within our own heart. So it's a very unpleasant feeling. And it's so unpleasant that we have to get rid of it. And we know only in the West, we know only two ways of get rid. Anger to get rid of, you know, harming another person. Being angry at another person. Getting rid of our impulsive greed is... Wow. Oh, okay. Sorry, man nacken man sie kon. Getting rid of the greed, you know, it's becoming so boiling hot that we just, some people just have to buy this new Mercedes-Benz or whatever. Or Rolls-Royce or whatever. Or if it's just like a little, you know, they just have to buy a car or a stereo or this or that, you know. Or a new coat or a new dress. Huh? Dressing up. Huh? Dressing up for what? The cloth is there to keep us warm. Or protect us from the heat or protect us from the rain. So why do we have to have 10 cloths?
อ่ะยกไปเลยหนึ่งสองสามปุ๊บไปเลยSo, giving the people a perspective how to deal with the difficulties in their life. Not telling them, oh yeah, yeah, just leave out this on our thumbs up. They're part of us. As I said, you know, be careful, you know, not to suppress them. As long as they give a talk.Not to suppress and just look what is there. Okay, that's there. You know, it's there. There's nothing to fudge about it. Okay, what's the cause of it? Okay, and then look for the cause of it. And then get rid of it. So that it doesn't come up again. We are so out of balance. We are so out of balance. That's why most of us need a psychiatrist. Because we are way out of balance. Have you seen this psychiatrist lately, huh? Once a week, twice a week, huh? It's just making feel us good, you know, that we can stay on. But he doesn't cure the problems. We have to cure them by ourselves. We have to see them, how they arise. Why does this bad thought always come into our mind? What is the reason for it? What is the situation that causes this bad thought to arise? And then look at it. Look at it very mindfully and see what's the cause of it.And all what the cause of is, you know, for all the things that we are troubled with, is just one of five things. It's either the body, it's a feeling, it's a memory or association, or it's a thought or it's consciousness. That's what troubles us. Now look at the cause and you will see it. And then we'll say, okay, so the consciousness is consciousness. Just knowing something came into our senses, our sensory. The thought is just a thought. It has nothing to do with me.That's not me. That doesn't belong to me. This is not myself. Lord Buddha gave us this. Now help us. You know, to put it, you know, to look at it. You know, we look at the body and think this is mine. We look at the glass, but we don't think it's mine. We look at the floor and we don't think this is me. So when we hit the floor, we are not hurt. But when we hit the body, we are hurt.These things do not belong to us. We borrowed them. We borrowed them, you know, to use it, like you borrowed the car of your friend. Well, be careful driving it. Eh? Don't. That's all. And to overly worry about these things is not good as well. You know, what is it good? You know, to every scratch, you know, like the Germans, they just love their car. You know, if somebody makes a scratch in it, you know, they get furious, infuriated.What has a scratch to do with the functionality of a car? Nothing. But they use the whole day, you know, to make up the scratch so that nobody sees it. That is just useless work. Completely useless. It doesn't reduce any of the functionality of the car. And the body is the car. And the chitta is the driver of the car. Educate the driver and then the body will be healthy.Because also most of the illnesses, except for catching a cold or getting this, is karmic effect. It's a result of our karma. It's not coming from anywhere, you know. It's not somebody, you know, he infected us. You know, this person, you know, I'm going to kill him because he infected me with HIV. It's our own karma that we are infected by HIV. It's our sexual misconduct that leads to this.It's not anybody else's. But we're going into the court and sue this person. Huh? Why? Take on responsibility. Get up. Grow up. Take responsibility for your own life. Be responsible for whatever happens right now. I'm responsible. Nobody else. Hmm? This will change your world. If you really take that up, this will change your world within...a few years, completely revolutionize it. being responsible for one's own action and for one's own happiness. Not somebody else, not the government, not the other people, not the environment. I am responsible for my own karma. I'm responsible for this kind of illness. I'm responsible for loss of money or for gain of money or for whatever. It's karma. It's karma, it's like a boomerang coming back to us. If you send it out now, you know, it depends on how strong you send it. Eh? It might come back this life, or it might come back the next life, or in seven lives. It's just growing a seed, you know. Some seeds are growing very fast. If you grow salad, you know, it grows very fast. If you grow potatoes, it takes a long time. If you grow wheat, you know, and especially if you grow a fruit tree. It takes years to bring the first fruits, but it takes a lot. It brings us a lot of fruits. Wheat just brings us one time, you know, potatoes just one time, but fruit tree. So some of the karma, you know, takes ages to come back to us, or takes lives to come back to us. But when it comes back, it comes in such a plentiful, you know, be it good karma or be it bad karma. Just be careful. If you have a good friend, and a teacher normally is considered to be a good friend, then he's not only going to say nice things to us. A good friend, you know, who really is worried about our well-being, you know, he will say, you know, if you do this, you know, you will have very unpleasant results. So he reminds us. He exhorts us. And he scolds us. That's a good friend. He's really interested about our well-being. Like a person, you know, like a father and mother who see that little child running on the street and see a truck coming by. They call it back. But the child wants to run, so he doesn't see it. So they have to grab it, you know, hold it. And the child will get angry because it wanted to run. It can't see the danger of the truck coming and running it over. So it will get angry at the parent for stopping their wishes, for stopping their ways. And that's why we get angry if somebody, you know, tells us something, we shouldn't do this. We want to do it. Who is he who says it? But that person might have a good reason. He might have seen the danger, you know, that comes with doing this or that. That's what a good friend is for. Or that's what a spiritual friend is for, a spiritual teacher. And only if we are prepared, you know, to make out the way. The way out of the roller coaster of life, of going up and down. Going up is slow, going down is fast. Up is heaven, down is hell. Always up. You know, there is no end. You know, it's just one circle, you know, going up, going down, going up, going down. Sometimes up very high, down very low, up a little, down a little. Just look, next time when you see a roller coaster, look at it and think about the roller coaster of life. That's what we are into. If we want to find a way out of this roller coaster, then we really have to work. And then we have to work at the 10 fetters that binds us to this kind of life. And the first fetter is a doubt. Doubt that there is heaven, doubt that there is hell. Doubt that there is karma and doubt that there is the result of karma. That there is good karma and bad karma, and there are good results and bad results. We just doubt it. And then we think, you know, after this life everything ends, just ends. Eh? And so where? Where does it all come from if it can just end like this? We know nothing disappears in this whole universe. Nothing disappears. Ah, how can we think? How can we be so stupid and think everything ends after this life? Nothing disappears. Everything changes into something else. The body changes back into the earth element, into the water element. The fluids that run out into the air element that goes out first, in the fire element that goes out quickly, after the earth element, after the air element. And at last, you know, even the rest of the flesh and the bones, you know, go back. And after 50, 100, or 1,000 years, nothing is left of us. Of this body. The chitta has gone on in another body. Just like when we wreck the car, and if we have enough money, you know, we can buy a new car. We don't even think about the old car anymore. We're not even interested in it. You know? Or if the old car has become, you know, got so old that it broke down. We buy the next car, you know, and we don't think about the old car. We're certainly not attached to this old car because we love this new car that runs very well. And this is just like with the body. So that's the first fetter that binds us. The doubt that, you know, after this life everything is gone, or the doubt that there's heaven or hell, or the doubt that there are results of karma, or that there is karma, the law of karma. Effects and cause and effect. We know it from physics, so we should believe it, that it also applies to mental things. If it applies to waves and light, you know, why shouldn't it apply to our thoughts and consciousness and memory? It's just the same thing. And the second fetter is this fetter of fiddling with the rules. And what are the rules? The five precepts. Today I keep them all, now, today I want this, you know. I know it's against the five precepts, you know. But I really want it, you know. Tomorrow I'll take them anew. You don't get anywhere. Keep them, and keep them for the rest of your life. That is the second fetter. And the third fetter is believing that the driver and the car are one and the same thing. You don't know it, you know. We look in the car and we see the driver. And without the driver, the car won't fudge. And it's the same thing with the chitta. When the chitta is quiet, the body won't move. Not the slightest thing. There's just breathing going on and the blood is flowing. That's all. When the chitta is completely quiet, nothing happens. So, the chitta is the driver of this body. If it doesn't move, the body won't move. Huh? And some people know it. So, that is the third fetter. Once we undermine the third fetters, until they are just a hair, you know, they will break. And once they break, we enter the stream. The stream out to Nibbana. The stream that leads to Nibbana, no matter what, we will end up there. So we have found the way out, the door, the gate, out of this roller coaster. And that is important. If you want to think of something that you want important for your life, what you want to do with your life, think about it. You will get stuck in the roller coaster, okay? Some people think they're going to be very generous, you know, having a lot of respect and having a lot of gratitude so that they come up, you know, high up in the heavenly realm. But once they spend all their money, like we spend it on vacation, we work in the hell for a long time, working hell for a long time, you know, to have four weeks or 4 months of vacation. Once our money is gone, we have to go back. So once the generosity, gratitude and respect is gone, well, they have to come back to the human realm or to the hell realms, whatever. It's not only that we are only doing good karma, we also do, every day we do bad karma. And that means, you know, we have to spend it in the times of prison. Yeah, we have to go to a prison. If we go against the laws, and the laws of this universe are the laws of the five precepts. So if we go against them, then we will have to end up down there. We will be caught one time, you know, and then that's it. And then you have to stay for 7 days or 7 years or 7 lives in the prison. Until that deed is gone, you know, and then you can come back up. And we are back in the human realm and do enough karma that leads us for the next 200,000 years either to heaven or to hell. And when we pass again heaven or hell, then we come back to the human life where we can do a lot of karma. Just to pass up the next 200,000 years, maybe now in heaven or now in hell, you know, whatever. If that is what you want, okay, go ahead. It's your life. I'm not interested. I don't want it. That was my intention when I ordained. I don't want to. Or when I started practicing, when I started the recluse life about 16 or 17 years ago, I don't want to come back. No way. And I'm going to make it, no matter what. I'm not going to come back in this circus. In the circus of, you know, circus of senses. Just like, you know, sometimes when I see people, you know, so caught up in virtual reality games, and I think, that's just the way that the humans are caught up in this realm. Virtual reality, human realm. Look at them, you know, how they're caught up, and they think that is real. And we think this is real. Okay. You get an idea? So think about very carefully what you want to do with your life. It's up to you. You are responsible for everything and every aspect. Take on the responsibility and you will fare well. Take upon you the 5 precepts and you will fare well. Next life will be better. So the one who has undermined the 3 fetters, you know, he will enter the stream. In the stream, at most, it takes him 7 lives. But these lives are not spent in hell anymore. He is prevented to go down into hell. That is one good side effect. All his bad karma he has done in the previous lives is suspended. It will come back in a form of human hardship or other kind of hardship. But he has not passed it. He has not to pass it anymore. He has an amnesty for not going down to hell anymore. And he has a guarantee that within 7 lives he makes it to Nibbana, to the end of all suffering, to the end of all dukkha. Okay, and with this I stop the talk.